World Stroke Day is tomorrow, and seems like a really good time to be talking to a couple of people about strokes, one from the medical side, one from the patient side. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. One of our guests with us by phone, Dr. Joshua Meadow, is a tenured associate professor in neurosurgery at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. He directs the neurocritical care at UW Health. In the studio with me today is Eric Sarno, a stroke survivor, triathlete, advocate, and author of a soon-to-be-released book on his comeback from a stroke at the age of 36. His new book is called Stroke Runner. It should be available in the next week or two, a couple of weeks anyway. So what would you like to know about the signs of strokes? Do you have questions about treatments that are available? Maybe a question about the whole recovery process, as I'm sure Eric can talk about as well as we visit with him and with Dr. Meadow. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Joshua Meadow, thank you for joining us today. Appreciate it.
Glad to be here.
And Eric Sarno, thank you so much as well.
Of course.
So, Eric, maybe you could briefly tell us about the lead-up to your stroke at age 36. What signs of stroke did you experience and so forth?
You know, the actual signs of the stroke itself didn't precipitate till I was actually admitted to the hospital. I was having severe back pains, and I had received an epidural injection for some of those pains, and I had a dural puncture that was causing me to have really bad headaches. And so I was in and out of the ER getting blood patches, as Dr. Meadow could probably speak to if anyone doesn't know what those are. And finally, I was getting ready to leave the hospital in the morning, decided to take a shower after just being overnight at the hospital.
Yeah.
And numbness started to happen on the left side of my body, and I started to twitch a little bit and ended up collapsing in the shower and falling onto the bathroom floor having a grand mal seizure.
Oh, my goodness. Is that a typical sign, Dr. Meadow?
Not the seizure parts, but it is common for people to have numbness and weakness on a side.
It's other things that might be signs?
You could have headaches that go along with that. You could have problems with speech, either being able to understand speech or be able to get that speech out. Those are very common. People will notice a facial droop, and sometimes when they're drinking their morning coffee or what have you, it'll start to dribble out of the side of their face.
Yeah. And, Eric, I guess if you're going to have a stroke, it's not a bad place to have well, maybe not in the shower, but you're right there with medical folks right there.
Yeah, I was very fortunate. You know, leading up to that admittance to the hospital, I was having severe headaches to where I was nauseous to a point to where I couldn't even sit up. So I had to lay down to feel better. And so these headaches were so severe. And, you know, that would be one of the things that Dr. Meadow talks about, severe headaches. I mean, headaches like you've never had before. I mean, that's my recollection of mine.
And that was how long back was it now?
Oh, gosh, that was probably about 12 years ago or so.
And it was a long time recovering.
Yeah, it was. So I was in the hospital for about a little over a month, almost 2 months, and in the ICU for about 2 weeks, 10 days. And then I was fortunate that I was able to, you know, I was strong enough at some point to do a lot of my rehab in the hospital before I left. And unfortunately, not a lot of stroke survivors are able to do inpatient rehab.
Yeah, so you're kind of lucky that way.
Very fortunate, yeah.
And you're a runner. You're a pretty active guy.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things where sometimes life can be positive and negative at different points in your life. And so I was at a fun point in my life where I was very active. And this kind of stuff isn't supposed to happen, I guess, at 36 years old, right?
Yeah, no, you hope it doesn't. Dr. Meadow, what's the initial treatment for a stroke?
It depends on the kind of stroke. If it's when we talk about strokes, we oftentimes think about those that bleed in the head and those that do not bleed. A stroke is basically a cerebrovascular accident or a problem with the blood vessels in the head. For those that bleed, then we have to look and see what the cause of the bleed is, and then try to treat it aggressively. So that oftentimes involves a surgical procedure, but not always.
Yeah.
For those that are not hemorrhagic strokes, then it's oftentimes trying to see if they're within a time frame where they can have the blood vessel opened up, either with a medicine or mechanically with a surgery.
Wow, mechanically.
Yes, so you could imagine going up with a little catheter and trying to snare or pull out a piece of clot, or in Wisconsin it could look like a piece of cheese and bratwurst. I don't know, but you know, you can imagine trying to pull this piece of material away that is otherwise causing the brain to not get the blood flow that it needs.
Wow!
And so those are for the non-hemorrhagic strokes.
Is one worse than the other? Neither one's a good thing, but
it's all about location. It is really what it is. It's where you actually have it. It's kind of in a lot of ways like real estate. You can imagine that the cost of a 1,200 square foot apartment in Manhattan would be substantially different than, say, a 1,200 square foot house in western Nebraska.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Mariah in Milwaukee has something for us. Let's go there. Mariah, hello.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. So I manage the Stroke Rehabilitation Center of Southeastern Wisconsin. We are a joint research program between the Medical College of Wisconsin and Marquette University. And we have a really cool event coming up for stroke survivors next week. We partnered with Xfabula, which is a local storytelling association, and we are going to be having a community workshop for stroke survivors. And it's going to be, one of them will be held at Independence First on November 6th, and then one will be held at the United Community Center on November 8th. And you can find more information about that on our Facebook page. So if you just search Facebook for the Stroke Rehabilitation Center, it'll come up, and there's a lot more information there. But we really encourage everybody, even people who have aphasia or trouble speaking after their stroke, we would really love for everybody to come out and participate. We've done the event once before, and we had about 20 stroke survivors, and it was really wonderful to hear everybody's stories.
Oh, it sounds great, Mariah. Thank you so much for calling. So it's Stroke Rehabilitation Center Facebook mm-hmm. page.
Yep. Okay. That's us.
Thank you so much. And Dr. Meadow, I'm sure there are other programs similar to that one going on in other places?
That it hosts every year. We also have a neuro ICU reunion that we try to host every other year.
Yeah, so it's Eric, have you participated in those kinds of events?
Yeah, I think especially this event we're talking about in Milwaukee, that's another great opportunity for not just the survivors, but their family and caregivers and friends to be a part of. Mm-hmm. That's very important. The social aspect of getting back into the social part of life after a stroke is very important. And I think it's very healing in many ways.
Yeah. Mariah, thanks again. Let's go to Esther in West Allis. Hi, Esther.
Hello. Yes, I have had pulsatile tinnitus for over 20 years, and I was wondering if that would ever cause a stroke.
Tinnitus.
My pulse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it by itself, not necessarily a cause of a stroke or could cause a stroke. It depends. If there's a collection of blood vessels that's causing a collection of blood vessels that's engorged and otherwise shouldn't be in the position that it is, that's causing you to have that tinnitus, then it should be evaluated just to make sure it doesn't cause you to have a stroke. You could imagine other things potentially too, but by itself it doesn't cause a stroke, and it's often not necessarily a sign of having had a stroke either. But it could, if there's...
Boop. We lost Dr. Meadow. Dr. Meadow, are you there?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. We lost the last couple sentences of what you were talking about there.
Oh, well, it just depends on, you can have that where you can hear your own heartbeat in your ear. By itself, oftentimes that's not related to something that's going to cause a stroke. Now, that said, there are rare circumstances where there could be blood vessels that are taking on flow that they shouldn't take on, that could lead to a hemorrhagic stroke or some other problem. And so if you have a problem, it should probably be evaluated by your physician to make sure there's no abnormal blood vessels there. But it's not a sign of a stroke typically. And it would
be a rare thing for, well, it sounds like it wouldn't be a sign of a stroke. Yeah, the signs of a stroke, you talked a little bit, but not so much about the causes yet of a stroke. Here, Eric, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not what you would define as a potential stroke candidate, but that's the thing that I personally want people to understand, and I think that's why it's important to understand the signs and symptoms of stroke, because it can happen at any age, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there a genetic component to it, Dr. Joshua Meadow?
Yeah, there are. Well, most strokes actually happen pretty sporadically. But the things that we think about that could be related to them are high blood pressure and smoking and diabetes. If you genetically are prone to having high cholesterol or high triglycerides, that can lead to it. So there are some genetic components, but as a silver bullet that just says this: if you have this genetic problem, then you're going to have a stroke. is a little harder to find.
Mm.
Sometimes you could have some congenital or other weaknesses in blood vessels too, which can lead to hemorrhagic type strokes.
Yeah. Talking with a couple of guests today. Tomorrow is Stroke Awareness Day, so we're talking about strokes with Dr. Joshua Meadow. He is a tenured associate professor of neurosurgery at the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health, and with Eric Sarno, a stroke survivor, triathlete, and an advocate. Great to have both of them with us. Certainly, if you have questions, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer today, Nigel O'Shea, our engineer, and you are listening to the Ideas Network. Talking about stroke and stroke prevention and treatment today with our two guests. One of our guests is Dr. Joshua Meadow of the University of Wisconsin School of Medicine and Public Health. He directs neurocritical care at UW Health. Eric Sarno, stroke survivor, triathlete, and advocate. His book, coming out probably in mid-November, is called, titled, oh, is it out right now? Oh, he says out right now. It's called Stroke Runner, written with Doug Moe. And so it's great to be able to mention that as well. And you talk about your experiences, and you ended up with a number of surgeries, Eric, at 45 days in the hospital, if I'm not mistaken. Why was it so, your recovery so complicated, and you look like you're doing pretty well now, but.
Yeah, well, thank you. I think for me, and as Dr. Meadow can speak to, and I always say, you know, you've met one person who's had a stroke, you've met one person that's had a stroke, because each stroke is really different in my experience as a survivor. And so for me, you know, I had just different complications. You know, I had to have a craniotomy to let my brain kind of swell and give it room in my skull. So they had to take part of that out. Well, then a couple months later when we put it back in, unfortunately, there was an infection and I had to go back in. And so, you know, things can happen. I was in the hospital. I had an infection. You know, I had a shunt put in. The shunt wasn't draining, you know, the way that it's supposed to. So I had to have that surgically removed and another one put back in. So I unfortunately had – I'm kind of one of those – unfortunate stories, but there's a lot of positive ones that I've seen, you know.
Yeah. Well, talking about Dr. Meadow, let's talk positive for a minute. I mean, here we have Eric with 45 days in the hospital. I'm certainly it beats the alternative of not making it for sure. But
right.
But what about success with dealing with stroke patients?
I think Eric actually probably had a harder course than most stroke patients do. But the
We lost you there for a second.
Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me again?
Yeah, we can hear you again. Go ahead.
Okay, no problem. I think Eric had a particularly hard go of it, and his was a particularly complicated stroke. I think that some patients come in and they get fixed right away and everything's great. Sometimes it's just a medication that is given, a clot-busting medication. That's enough. Sometimes it's more. What's interesting is that a lot of it's very time-related. And so if part of the brain that has been affected is already dead, then it just depends on how big it is and where it's located, and that'll determine a lot of what the recovery is. But the brain is very plastic.
Oh, we lost you again. Oh, darn.
Technology.
So
Can you hear me again?
Yeah. You were just saying the brain is very plastic.
Yes, it's very plastic. And so it can rewire around areas of damage depending on how big the area is. And that's why some people get back to doing amazing things. And Eric's just amazing all the way around. Not just his recovery, but just the person he is. He's really very driven and really an inspiration to everybody.
Yeah.
Well, it was really cool to see, Dr. Meadow, when you talk about that plasticity. As I was getting better, I would go and have my checkups, and I would see the CAT scans, and you could see when some of those blood vessels were growing again in my brain or were getting blood back in the area where the clot was. It was coinciding with me feeling better and being able to, you know, move better. That was pretty cool to see.
Oh, man. Yeah, that would have been. And the whole speech thing, I remember my dad had a stroke, and he lost his speech for a time, and he used the time to go to with my mom to northern Wisconsin, and he would go out in the boat and fish, and that's where he worked on his speech. He'd spend the day out on the lake and work on his speech with maybe my mother or just on his own.
Yeah.
And just kept working at it until it came back.
I've met some survivors that feel music was very helpful for their aphasia in their speech.
Ah, interesting. Madeline in Green Bay, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
I have a friend who is elderly who was bike riding, and luckily he was in the area of Voyager Park when it happened, but he doesn't know what happened, but all of a sudden, he found himself on the ground, and so he had to have blacked out momentarily. He instantly felt okay, and they're going to put a heart monitor on him for a month to check that out. But could that possibly have been a stroke?
Dr. Meadow, what do you think?
It's a possibility. You can definitely have it where you lose enough blood flow to part of your brain where you lose consciousness. Generally, when we hear people having these sort of issues, if they're on a bike, for example, and they find themselves on the ground, sometimes they may have fallen off the bike for other reasons, and they just have some amnesia to the event, and so they don't remember exactly what happened and what caused them to black out. Sometimes it's related to the heart, and that's a lot more common. But a stroke is still a possibility, and you know, I think people should be evaluated just in case to make sure that they don't have any vascular cause to their brain.
Yeah, sounds like your friend is getting that kind of care, Madeline. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Susan in Bark River, Michigan, your turn. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I was just wondering if there's been any studies related to people with history of migraines who would possibly later on in life be at higher risk for strokes.
That's a really good question, and I have to admit that I don't really treat migraines as a neurosurgeon, but there are studies that have linked migraines with stroke histories. Migraine is a vascular phenomenon too. Whether or not that level of coincidence directly relates to certain types of strokes is really what's in question. And I would actually have to admit that I would defer to some of my neurology colleagues on that sort of information. But it is a vascular phenomenon as well.
All right. Thanks, Susan. Appreciate it. Marge in La Crosse, your turn.
Yes. Thank you for taking me. First of all, a little family history. My grandmother was 70 years old and died from a series of strokes that started in her 50s. My mom had many strokes, and she died last year at the age of 97. And she had a series of many strokes. And I'm 68. And what happened in December of 2017, I was working with my mother in her assisted living, and all of a sudden I had this flash in my right eye, and I started feeling funny. Within a half hour, I ended up in emergency. And while in emergency, I could not remember that I had been in a horrific car accident in 2016, and one of our pugs had to be put down. And I couldn't remember any of that. I could not remember my son, where he was going to school. Within an hour, things started coming back to me. They did an MRI, and they found nothing wrong as far as the brain goes, but they called it a TIA. Is that a correct diagnosis? And can you explain that a little more?
Sure. Well, I can't tell you if it's a correct diagnosis or not. A TIA is a transient ischemic attack, and that just means that your brain temporarily lost the blood supply in a particular area, and that blood supply was returned without causing any permanent damage that we can tell by looking at you. That's basically what a TIA is. But you could have reasons why you would have neurological changes like that. That may not be related to a blood flow problem, things that could be like a seizure or other things, or they could be related to blood flow. It's a hard one to try to answer. You know, oftentimes people could have delirium for other reasons, a urinary tract infection, any number of things, a medication that they've taken, something that was new that they were taking. There's so many possible reasons. Is it a correct diagnosis? It's hard to know just by what you've discussed over the phone. But it's a possibility.
Is it the kind of thing that if you have one that you're likely to have more, or is it just individual, I suppose?
It's fairly individual, but the bigger issue is that if you've had what is concerning for a transient ischemic attack, you want to really look for what caused you to have that TIA, what caused you to have that transient ischemic. Because if you it may be like an early sign for a much larger stroke coming down the pike, and then you need to have something evaluated and potentially fixed, so that you don't have any of these mini strokes again.
Yeah. So you need to be, if you're in Marge's kind of situation, you need to be working carefully with your physician.
That's exactly right, to find out what caused it. And then obviously if there is a cause, you want to get on it right away.
Yeah. There you go, Marge. Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Tyler in Monroe. Hi, Tyler.
Hello.
What's on your mind today?
Well, I just wanted to share, about a year and a half ago, my wife woke up with the worst headache of her life, and it turned out to be a complete blockage of her carotid artery. She spent about 40 days at St. Luke's, and just in her recovery, which has been ongoing, she's still disabled, but just the number in support groups, the number of young people that we've seen that have been suffering from strokes is just astounding. She was 39 when it happened, and I mean it's completely life changing at such a young age.
Yeah. A comment from you. Well, let's get a comment from both. What about your comment, Eric?
Well, I like the fact that Marge in La Crosse brought up the eyes. And, you know, when we talk about the symptoms, you know, we think about FAST, but there's a more recent BFAST. So we talk about balance and eyes. And sometimes if you have blurry vision, and most of these symptoms happen out of nowhere. And I've met survivors that, you know, I was at work and all of a sudden my vision was blurry and then I couldn't say coherent sentences. So it's kind of the symptoms to recognize. And if they're really odd symptoms out of nowhere, I think that's really, you know, important to take action right away. And I think Dr. Meadow talked about time, and that's really what this is all about. I've, you know, been fortunate and honored to meet so many survivors, especially at the University of Wisconsin Hospital. And many of them talk about they had a really bad headache and they went and they laid down, or they weren't making sense and they thought that just maybe they were tired, so they went and rested. But, you know, unfortunately, they were having an event.
Oh, man. And you're kind of an advocate, too. You spend some time over there once in a while, don't you?
Yeah, you know, I would make this my job if I could. So, unfortunately, you know, I don't get to the hospital as often as I want to. I think it was really important when myself and my family and friends, when we were going through this, we didn't have someone other than the excellent medical professionals at UW that could get us through this, but it would have been nice to have a family member or a caregiver or an actual survivor that would be able to have kind of given us their perspective. And, it sounds like Tyler a little bit here too, that, you know, when it's nice to kind of get the other side of, you know, how long was your recovery and what was it like? And did you get sad and were you emotional? And I've had people say, my dad acts like a different person now. And, you know, again, it's different for everybody, but it's really important to be able to talk about it, and support groups are really important.
And I would just say, for a person like Tyler or anyone else, your wife or your husband or, you know, your close family member has something like this, it's got to really be tough on the families.
Yeah, and you know what I learned, and I didn't think about this, is I was in my bed in the neuro ICU, and I'd have visitors. A friend of one of my friend's mothers, when she was in the room with me, you know, she said, "This has been really hard on your friends because at 30 some years old, many people now are kind of seeing their own mortality in front of their eyes through your stroke." And so it's really hard on them because in your 30s, you're not thinking about life and death necessarily. And so that's what's really hard on family and caregivers because everybody kind of goes through this together, even if they didn't have the actual stroke. It's you know, they're kind of seeing it through you.
Yeah. And there are and I assume, Dr. Meadow, there's help. Well, both of you can comment on this. But on the family side of things, not only just the patient himself or herself.
Yes, you're asking if there's help or counseling for patients' families as well as the patients.
Yeah.
Yes, we do. We have support groups for that at UW, and it sounds like there are lots of support groups throughout the state of Wisconsin based on an earlier phone call. But yes, that is absolutely correct. And I think it's very important for the families to get that support. I think most people go through crisis mode with their family member, you know, in the first week or two, and then they kind of are they've given everything they had in those first couple of weeks, and really it's those weeks of recuperation and rehabilitation that they need the most help from their loved ones. And so, it's really good to have that sort of support available.
Yeah, Tyler, how are you doing? You work doing okay?
Well, it's been a long and rough road. We've got two young sons, so. You know, my wife is still in a facility. She's not been able to come home, I guess. But you know, it's been life changing for all of us. So,
yeah. Well,
we do our best.
Yeah, you have to. That's all you can do, Tyler. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, and good luck to you. And you know what? If you need some support down the road, don't be afraid to seek it out, and probably through your local hospital or the doctors that you're working with have that kind of family support help, just as Dr. Meadow was describing. So please take advantage of it. And thank you again. Jan in Madison, we'll give you a chance now. Hi, Jan.
Hi. For the last year and a half, I've experienced headaches that were so extreme that I experienced nausea with them. And so that's something really new for me. I'm also a very regularly fit person. These headaches I've tried to address with chiropractic and with over-the-counter meds. I've never been diagnosed as migraines, but I do feel like this is something new and they are so extreme. I'm wondering, how do you, I guess, know when it's time or something to look into? And I don't know who I'd go to ask if this is a concern or a symptom of something bigger.
Dr. Meadow?
Yeah, excellent. I'm sorry you're having these terrible headaches. I think if you're having new headaches for any reason, I think it's probably a good idea to be evaluated initially by your primary care provider. and they can get some medical imaging at that point to try to get an idea of what's causing those headaches. And at that point, you're oftentimes referred to either a neurosurgeon or a neurologist, depending on if there's a structural lesion, something that's in there that doesn't belong. You'd probably go to a neurosurgeon. And if it's something that they don't see a physical dilemma on imaging, they oftentimes will send you to a neurologist for further evaluation, because there's all different kinds of headaches and they can mean very different things.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen your primary care physician, you definitely, from the sound of it, Jen, you should be looking into visiting with that person for sure. Thank you very much for calling. You can join in too, 800-642-1234, the number. Email at ideas@wpr.org. Joanne in Appleton emailed to say that the general public is likely somewhat familiar with the physical symptoms of stroke, the weakness, numbness, or difficulty with speech and language. She wanted to mention some of the more subtle symptoms of frontal lobe stroke, which will present with emotional and or personality changes and loss of executive function. These symptoms may be more difficult to catch in a timely fashion, but the results of this kind of stroke can be devastating, even if there are no changes in physical function. Dr. Meadow, is that about right?
Yeah, I agree that that's definitely a possibility. I think depending on those strokes and how they're occurring will depend on the degree to which you have that level of dysfunction. So I think it's really the biggest thing. I don't know that some of them are very, very subtle. Some of them are so small you don't even notice a change at all. And then you look at a CAT scan or an MRI, and you'd say, oh, geez, this person has had some damage to the deeper, wider matter of the brain that they wouldn't otherwise have expected to see.
You might want to talk a bit more, Dr. Meadow, about the UW support group, Fresh Start, it's called.
To be honest with you, I don't have a lot of experience with that support group. But I think that the support groups in general that the UW Health has are absolutely tremendous. I don't know, Eric, do you have a lot of experience with that support group or with some of the other support group stuff that we've worked on together?
Yeah. So the Fresh Start support group is it's something that tries to meet regularly, monthly at least. And the locations have varied. The Fitchburg Library was the last time I was aware that they were meeting, but certainly most of the doctor's offices are very familiar with the local support groups at the various hospitals. But you can find a lot of that information online as well.
For something like that, who's eligible to come to the – I suppose anyone.
Well, I think anyone. So we used to do it at the hospital. We were really kicking off this support group at the hospital, and it was kind of something where as an advocate – and, I'm fortunate enough where I get to meet some of these families. So when they were at the hospital, we would tell some of the families, hey, Thursday we're having a support group meeting down in room whatever, mm-hmm. and you're welcome to come back and just sit in there. And sometimes the timing isn't right for some people, but I think whether you go and participate or go and just listen, a support group is very important. It was vital, vital to my recovery.
Yeah, you had not only physical, but you had to go through, in your book you talk about this, you had mentally as well.
Yeah, I mean, I had to try to do everything all over again. Emotional things come with that. I was very fortunate. I had quite a few people with me along the way, along the journey. And I had two little girls that were really were my goal to get back and just trying to get back to being their dad again and be able to hug them. And so mm-hmm. everybody has a little different goals as they go through their recovery. And I think that's important to share those goals, both from the caregiver side and the patient side.
Maybe you could talk a bit. Now your new book is just out, Stroke Runner. Explain the book for us a bit.
Well, first of all, I'm not an author, so I was fortunate to have a lot of help with the book. But my doctors encouraged me, family members encouraged me, and there was just so many things that we felt writing about the experience was very therapeutic for me in many ways. But it also, what I try to do in and there is just tell my story and hopefully someone can relate in a variety of ways. But it was about not just being an athlete at one point, an amateur athlete, kind of a weekend warrior, but it was more of about having a job and, having a family and a young family. And you know, just trying to put those things in perspective and paint the picture of how that went over time and the recovery.
So I think it'd be a great book for, as I was thinking about it, almost anyone, family member or a person who's had a stroke.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I was a part of this athletic community, and when everyone was in the hospital, when I was in that first few hours of surgery, when it wasn't certain if I would live or not, everybody's kind of like, wait a second, we're runners, we're marathoners, we're triathletes. I mean, I had just finished my third Ironman. This stuff isn't supposed to happen.
Man, oh man, oh man. Well, what, Dr. Meadow, what can we do? Is there anything we can do to prevent a stroke or at least minimize one from happening?
Well, that's a great question. So it depends.
Oh, nuts. We lost.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, now I can. Go ahead.
It's interesting on my phone over here. It keeps saying in preservation mode, lost server connection. I don't know what that means. But at any rate, it depends on what medical conditions you have. So I think the first start is to see your medical provider and have a physical and have a pretty good idea of what issues you do have and how to treat those issues. And there's a plethora of those that would take hours to discuss. And I think that knowing your family history and then trying to be active and fit, I think are the big things. And Eric, I think, had done all of that stuff. And still, despite it all, you could still have something develop in life that could give you a stroke.
Eric, you tell us about the Retreat and Refresh Stroke Camp.
Yeah, so that's a unique thing that happens yearly. And I was very fortunate early on to be a big part of that and help that. University of Wisconsin has that camp every year, and I believe it's in Green Lake every year. And it's very nice because it brings in caregivers, stroke survivors, medical professionals, and it's a weekend. It's not like we're roughing it out in the woods in a tent. It's actually kind of a nice it's kind of a nice way to refresh, and you get together with other survivors, and it's kind of a weekend where the caregivers can kind of be pampered a little bit, and everybody gets to talk, and we do different events, and it's very therapeutic, very relaxing, and I would highly suggest that. I find, because I recovered to the point I did, I sometimes wondered if I felt in place there, because, you know, there's people at various times in their stroke recovery that are there. But I think it's for anyone who's recovered, anyone who's going through recovery. I would say every resource that you can take advantage of, I would suggest to do that.
And when is that? Is the summer months or...?
Yeah, usually I believe it is in the summer. Again, that would be something you can find more online.
And where would you go to find that?
You could go to the UW website for that, or you could just Google Stroke Camp, University of Wisconsin, UW Health Stroke Camp.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time, both of you taking the time to be with us today. It's an important subject. I've had, my own father and several a couple of friends at least who have gone through this whole stroke process, and it's not a fun process to go through. But we're glad to have people like you, Dr. Josh Meadow, out there to help us. I appreciate you being with us today.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, and Eric Sarno, you are an inspiration too, and I hope a lot of people read your book, Stroke Runner. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you. I'm honored.
Eric Sarno, stroke survivor, triathlete and advocate. His new book, written with Doug Moe, an old friend of mine, as a matter of fact, and it's titled Stroke Runner, and it's available right now. Get it online or...
Yeah, most book platforms, you can download it right away, and then the hard copy will be available soon through BookBaby and Amazon and
all the rest
anywhere.
Of it. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you so much, both, for being with us today. Dr. Josh Meadow, by the way, is an associate professor of neurosurgery at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and directs the neurocritical care at UW Health. Well, it's a topic that I'm sure we're going to be revisiting on another show down the road for sure. Lots of interest among listeners today, and certainly not something you want to have to deal with, but something, if it happens, you got to deal with it, and there's resources out there that can help you deal with it. And there is hope. There is hope. I'm looking at a good example of that right across the table from me. Well, we're going to switch gears now. On October 9th in Denver, the temperature dropped from 83 to 13 degrees in just one day. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more closer to home when it comes to weather and climate with our weather guys who are coming up next on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.